Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series on the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Ki Teitse. This week, Rabbi Daniel Roth discusses Ki Teitse. Rabbi Daniel Roth is a faculty member of Pardes. He also serves as the director of the Pardes Advanced Scholars Program and as the coordinator of the Pardes Peace and Conflict Track. And now, Rabbi Daniel Roth.
Thank you, Larry. This coming Shabbat, Parshat Ki Teitse, we remember and mark 10 years since 9/11. The question I would like to discuss with you today is, what do we do with this memory? Of course, we need to remember loved ones and heroes who sacrificed their lives to save others. But this tragedy is not a natural tragedy, but was brought about through the violence of others. So the question is, how do we remember the enemy other, and what do we do with this memory and our relationship with that group today? At the end of this week's Parsha, Parshat Ki Teitse, we read about remembering Amalek. And I'm on chapter 25 in Deuteronomy, verse 17. Zechorat asher asah lecha Amalek b'derech tzeitchem mimitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your journey after you left Egypt. How undeterred by fear of God he surprised you on the march when you were famished and weary and cut down all the stragglers in your rear. Therefore, when the Lord your God grants you safety from all your enemies around you in the land of the Lord your God gives you, as a hereditary portion, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. And I'll read the end. Timche et zechra Amalek mitachat hashamayim lo tishkach. We remember the terrible atrocities that Amalek did to our people in the desert coming out of Egypt. This memory is employed by these verses in order to ensure that the people continue to hate and has an eternal call for the destruction of the arch enemy, Amalek. Memory here is being used as a tool for continuing and deepening the identity conflict between these two groups, the Israelites and the Amalekites. This, however, is not the only use for remembering national deep conflicts with enemy others. Earlier in this same parsha, we have a commandment to not hate or loathe enemy others that afflicted pain upon us. And here I'm referring to the verse in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 8, where it says, "You shall not abhor an Edomite, for he is your brother. And you shall not abhor an Egyptian because you were a stranger in his land. Lo titav Edomi ki achichahu. Lo titav Mitzri ki ger hayita be'otso." Rashi strengthens the challenge of this verse by saying, even though the Edomites came out and wanted to kill us right before the Israelites came into the land, and the Egyptians, as Rashi writes in chapter 23, verse 8, even though they threw your firstborn male sons into the Nile, enslaved our people for hundreds of years, we're commanded in this verse not to hate them. And what is the reason, Rashi asks? Since they gave you a place to settle in a time of need, referring back to how the Egyptians welcomed us in, initially, in the times of Joseph, a time of famine, a time of need. What these psukim are doing is complexifying the relationship with our past enemy other. Yes, indeed, there were terrible things that were done. But, says the verse, remember, they're still your brother. Or, they still did good things. Not all was bad. This is a very important challenge in transferring memory, in conflict situations, the way we view the other and the way we view our memory of the other tends to become a lot more narrow. They caused pain with no good reason, and therefore we experience a certain degree of hatred and a need to fight back. These verses are challenging us to not look at only that linear pain, hatred, inflicting pain back way of a conflict, but rather saying things are more complex. The question is, what do we do with Amalek? And here I refer to you to a midrash, Apsikta de Rabbati, 11th century midrash, chapter 12, and it says as follows, when you come into the land, you shall remember to repay the good for the good and the bad for the bad. How so? You shall not despise the Edomite. Why? Because he is your brother. For good or for bad, he's your brother. You shall not despise the Egyptian, because you are a stranger in his land. For good or for bad, you spent a few years there. However, Amalek, Zechor Asher Asah Lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Here the Midrash draws a very clear contrast. Egyptians and Edomites, okay, we can forgive them. We can transform that relationship into being a non-conflictual relationship. But Amalek? Impossible. Nevertheless, I would like to offer a few ways of how to complexify our relationship, our memory with Amalek using rabbinic interpretations and Midrash. How can we do this? It's not the same way as with the Egyptians, that they might have helped us at one point, although if we can find a source for that, it would be interesting. But rather the question is, when we remember Amalek and what they did to us, can we also find room in our memory to remember or imagine how they, the Amalekites, might have remembered us? And if we can get into their memory, the story is told generation to generation about how they saw the Israelites, without giving in on our stories, it might help us to complexify our memory of them as well. And I'd like to offer here a few examples, again, based upon traditional rabbinic sources. First of all, who is Amalek? Amalek, the person, the original person, was the great-great-grandson of Avram Avinu, the great-grandson of Yitzchak, and the grandson of Esav. His mother, Timna, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin 99b, originally wanted to join the Israelites, even though she was of royalty. She wanted to join, to give up on her privileges and join the Israelites, but was rejected. And as a result of this rejection, she joined Esav's family by becoming a lowly concubine to Esav's son, Eliphaz. And the Gemara here explains that as a result of Timna's feelings of rejection, Amalek was born into the world already with a certain element of animosity and pain towards the Israelites. And I'm reading just from the last line of the story on 99b in Sanhedrin. From her, Timna, Amalek was descended, who afflicted Israel. Why so? Because they should not have repulsed her. Amalek's earliest memories of the Israelites were of how they mistreated his mother, Timna. But those early childhood memories of Amalek towards the Israelites were soon reinforced by other pain that they experienced and told from generation to generation. The Baalei Tosfot, the medieval rabbinic commentaries, in one book called Hadar Zkenim, in Exodus chapter 17, verse 8, tell the story of why Amalek wanted to destroy the Israelites when they came out of Egypt. And it starts as follows. Esav made his son Eliphaz take an oath that he would kill Jacob and thus regain the birthright which Jacob had acquired through guile. Here we have the setting of the scene, that Esav experiencing pain from being thirsty and almost at the verge of death back in Genesis 25, being tricked into selling his birthright, was never able to forgive his brother Jacob for what he did. And he asked his son Eliphaz to take revenge on Jacob, kill him, and therefore get back the birthright that belonged to him. But Timna persuades Eliphaz not to do that. And later, Esav, it says, Esav, disappointed in his son, adjured his grandson Amalek to kill Jacob. And again, Timna persuades Amalek not to kill Jacob yet, but rather the people of Amalek from the original family member of the person, Amalek. From generation to generation, for hundreds of years that the Israelites were in Egypt, waited patiently for that vengeance, according to the Tosfot. Until eventually, as it writes, but no sooner had the Israelites completed their term of servitude and left Egypt, than they were attacked by Amalek. Amalek was Zechor et asher asalacha Yisrael. Amalek said from generation to generation, remember what the Israelites did to Esav our father, of how they took our portion. And you must surely wipe out the Israelites. I'll mention here in parentheses another interesting story that does not connect in necessarily with memory, but does connect in with how the Amalekites perceive the Israelites, which is, according to some early commentaries, Amalek was actually one of the nations in Eretz Yisrael that was destined to be destroyed by the Israelites upon coming into Eretz Canaan. And therefore Amalek said, before they become too strong, this slave nation becomes mighty, we have to wipe them out preemptively before they overtake us and destroy all of us. But I want to get back to the role of memory. A third memory of Amalek hating the Israelites can be found with another arch enemy of the Israelites, Haman. Free to use your grogger. Haman, according to the Jewish tradition, is also a descendant of Amalek and is said to have remembered how he was the sole survivor of an Israelite genocide that wiped out his whole people. And as a result, he sought the opportunity to kill all the Israelites for what they had done. And here I'm reading from an early rabbinic, early Jewish commentary, Josephus, Antiquities of the Jews, Book 11, Chapter 6, Verse 5, where it says, he, Haman, thought it too small a thing to request of the king that he, Mordechai, alone might be punished. He rather determined to abolish the whole nation, for he was naturally the enemy of the Jews because the nation of the Amalekites, of which he was, had been destroyed by them. Remembering our pain by past conflicts in a way that allows us to transform our relationships with the current other group, as opposed to preserving our hatred towards them, is exactly the tension that I find, for example, on Yitzhak Rabin Day, the remembrance day of Yitzhak Rabin's assassination. The assassination of Yitzhak Rabin can be seen in Israeli society as either the first shot of a much larger rift and identity conflict between the right-wing slash religious population versus the left-wing slash secular population, when each side remembers the pain inflicted upon them by the other. Of course, the left-wing, secular, feeling that the champion of the peace process, Yitzhak Rabin, was assassinated and along with the peace process was assassinated. And the right wing, feeling, and the religious, feeling that they had been later demonized and hunted perhaps too strong, demonized and marginalized as being enemies of the state, sometimes even proposing conspiracy theories, perceive that event as a very deep point of pain as well, and a rift. However, it can also become a National Remembrance Day, in which it is a call for dialogue and bridging and amending relationships between potentially these two conflicting groups and identities. So many amazing Israeli NGOs, whether it be school curriculum, dialogue groups, or even academic programs throughout Israel, were established as a direct result of Rabin's assassination in order to try to help transform these relationships between these groups, help each side understand the other in a more of a deeper way without necessarily having everyone give in on their identity, but understand it in a deeper way. I experienced a similar tension on 9/11. We can remember this very tragic event as one of the biggest causes of a split between different cultures, civilizations, if you will, religions. Remembering that there is perhaps this eternal holy war that has now been established between groups. Or we can see this tragic event as an opportunity to begin to mend relationships and learn more about the other. Just thinking of one example from the academic field of religion and conflict resolution, which has been my personal focus academically and at Pardes. The number of programs, whether academic or in the field, that have opened up as a direct result of 9/11 to allow for the study of religion to be not just as a cause of major conflict, but as rather a source of inspiration for establishing healthy societies, both within groups and between conflicting or potentially conflicting groups, is surely amazing. Hundreds of programs throughout America and the world really trace back their inspiration from feeling that things had gotten to be so low, so painful from 9/11. This kind of challenge in thinking is, I think, one of the challenges of 9/11 for this year on Parsha Ki Tetzeh of remembering. I'd like to conclude with the following midrash from Devarim Rabbah on this week's Parsha. And the midrash reads as follows. This is from Devarim Rabbah 5, verse 5:15. If a human being injures his neighbor, it never leaves his heart. But not so Hashem. Israel was in Egypt, and the Egyptians enslaved them with lime and bricks. After all the evil they had done unto Israel, God had pity upon them and decreed, you shall not abhor an Egyptian, because you were a stranger in his land. But pursue after peace, as it is said, seek peace and pursue it. And I'll read it in Hebrew. Ela radfu achara shalom, shneimar bakesh shalom v'radfeyu. The challenge of this midrash is to be rodef shalom, even or especially with those that are our enemy other. Can we emulate God, though, in doing this? Trying to find elements of good, elements of common value, humanizing the other, even when we feel dehumanized. This is the challenge I feel of this week's Parsha. I think it's part of the challenge of remembering 9/11 today, 10 years later. And this is the challenge that we discuss and talk about very seriously within a Jewish context as part of the Pardes Peace and Conflict Track, otherwise known as Rotfei Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Roth. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.